I'm Lisa Morgan, Saturday afternoon host and co-host of The Weekly Reader here on WYPR. Federal funding for public radio is under serious threat. An end to that funding would make live streams like this one difficult to maintain. Stand up for public media and help fortify WYPR's future. Find out more and donate at WYPR.org. And thanks.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. My next guest is the Reverend Derek Weston, an author, filmmaker, podcaster, speaker, and educator who focuses on the intersection of food and faith. He's the co-author of a book called The Just Kitchen: Invitations to Sustainability, Cooking, Connection, and Celebration, in which he argues that food can be an instrument of activism for justice. And Derek Weston joins me in Studio B. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So for some folks, it's a stretch to contend that making a meal is an act of resistance right up there with marches and protests. How is that?
Yeah, I think it might feel like a stretch, but I think that what we understand is that anytime we're engaging in something like cooking, when we are voting with our dollars, with what we buy, we're voting with where we decide to purchase food, that we're supporting, if we're supporting local farmers, if we're supporting people who are growing food the right way, just listening to the last conversation, if we're supporting folks who are helping to keep our stories going, I think in terms of our racial ethnic stories, that all of those things can be very political acts.
Yeah, indeed. And you're with an organization called Creation Justice Ministries.
Yes.
And you have what you call a doctrine of creation.
Yes.
Which I'm fascinated by. And there are several aspects to this, and we'll talk about them, not necessarily in order. One of them is denial of interconnectedness. Mm. And that's, boy, it really is easy to lose sight of things, isn't it?
It really is. I think we can very easily as humans see ourselves as above the rest of the natural world, that we have subjugated it in some way. But then when you walk outside, you feel the weather, you feel the rain, you feel the sun, you recognize that we are just as much a part of the system as any other creature. So it's important that we recognize that what we do has impacts for the rest of the created order.
And related to that is a tenet of, again, this doctrine of creation called power as domination.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, those two have been, you know, closely linked, you know, throughout history.
Yeah, and it's a unfortunate misinterpretation of part of Genesis, where in the first creation story that's listed, God gives humans dominion over the fish and animals, and we've understood that dominion.
Yeah, there it is, right in chapter one.
Right in chapter one, we've got a pitfall, and that dominion is really supposed to look more like stewardship and custodianship, and not so much like domination, not so much about extraction and what we can take from it, but how can we care for it, recognizing that we have unique abilities that the rest of the created order does not have.
That's the Reverend Derek Weston. He is the co-author of The Just Kitchen: Invitations to Sustainability, Cooking, Connection, and Celebration. You are welcome to join our conversation with Dr. Weston, 410-662-8780, our email midday at WIPR.org. The other one, which I think, or one of the other ones, which I think is really, really important, you talk about the assumption of resources being limitless.
Yeah.
Here in America in particular, we have this notion that it ain't never going to end. And then something like COVID happens and you can't buy toilet paper. And you think, oh, whoa, what happened? You know?
Well, I think the assumption that we can continue to drill and that there will always be oil, that we can continue to blow up mountaintops and that there will always be coal, that we'll always be able to find natural gas. I think it leads us to sort of this exuberant use of resources in a way where we think the party's never going to end. And we're already seeing that that mindset of the party's never going to end is having huge consequences for climate, for natural environments, And that at some point these things will end. And what are we going to do when we do run out of them? What are we going to do when we're getting into violent conflicts over them, as we've already seen that in our history? So, yeah, we have to think about how do we put our limitations on ourselves. Part of power is self-limitation. And that's one thing that we're not always very good at.
Yeah, because you also talk about unchecked consumerism being part of the doctrine of creation. And of course, this is a thing that, you know, religious institutions across the board have talked about for a long time. I mean, from St. Francis of Assisi on, you know, it's a moral act, but it is related to universal justice. I mean, that individual act is related to the rest of the world's possibility for a just environment.
And what we have to recognize is that what is cheap for us is often costly for someone else, that it's often produced in sweatshops where people are carrying it. Ridiculous burdens, that it's often environmental consequences in places that we don't see, places that we have dubbed as sacrifice zones. So what ends up being cheap fuel, cheap food, cheap clothes for us often comes at huge expense to other humans that we may not see and to the rest of the natural world.
The very first tenet of the doctrine of creation is anthropocentrism, meaning this whole environment, this whole world is made for us.
Yes.
You know, we're the king of the castle and, you know, enough said, right?
Right. And that is no community works that way. No community is going to function well when one individual puts itself at the center. No team is going to work well. And we have to start seeing ourselves as part of a team, part of a community. Of the created order that we have a particular function to play. It's a unique function. It's one that only we can play. But the story isn't just about us. It's about this planet. It's about life on this planet, and it's about how we care for one another, both human and non-human.
When you talk about food and faith, even at a podcast called that very title, what is the role of the church? What is the role of the synagogue, the mosque, the organized religions when it comes to food policy, when it comes to, you know, a spiritual life that is guided by decisions that are made concerning food?
Yeah. Every religion speaks to compassion. Every religion speaks to the reduction of suffering, particularly for those who are most vulnerable in our culture. And if there is a way that what we eat, what we purchase in a restaurant, what we purchase in a grocery store can reduce the suffering of others in our community, we should take full advantage of that. So I think every religious community is finding ways to speak into a food system that so often the huge irony of our food system is that there are people who are working in it who can't afford to buy the things that they grow, the things that they pick, the things that they deliver, and that there are religious communities all across this country and across the world who are advocating for those in our food system to just be able to have a just wage.
We were just talking in the last segment about ultra-processed, ultra-formulated foods. But when it comes to eating healthy, and we all sort of have a general sense of that, you know, if you're going to get something that's grown by the farmer that you're buying it from, you know whether chemicals are used to aid and abet that process, et cetera. But it's also a matter of connecting, literally connecting to the earth. It's connecting to the environment in a visceral way. I mean, that's gonna shape your moral judgments in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, and that's why I think everyone should have the experience, even if it's just growing a pot of basil on a windowsill. Everyone needs to have the experience of growing something, of watching the miracle of putting seed in the dirt and watching things come out, because it totally changes your mindset around where food comes from. It's a very grounding connection. You know, that the word humus, which is dirt, and human and humility all come from the same root. You know, you can riff on that for a long time, but I think it grounds us in our actual being when we recognize that we come from the same place as our food and we return to the same places as our food.
Some suggestions for people to manifest, you know, the moral judgments that they want to be seen as making about food.
Yeah. One, I think we have to have a lot of grace for each other, that oftentimes we judge other people's eating habits, not recognizing that we have wild disparities in access to resources. With that being said, I think one of the best things we can do is know a farmer. Get to meet a farmer. And in a city like Baltimore that has a robust urban gardening and urban farming scene, get to know an urban farmer. I think
And you're right. There are plenty of them.
There's so many of them. I mean, we're blessed in the city to have farmers who are right in the city. But get to know where your food comes from. Get familiar with the land. Get familiar with the growers. Get familiar with the kinds of things that are important to them, because they become about, ultimately that becomes about, those are the people who are taking care of your body.
Yeah, and growing things yourself really does matter.
It really does. It really does change your perspective.
You know, I remember I was in graduate school living in a pretty rundown place. There were a lot of roaches, et cetera, et cetera. and my mom came to visit me, and she walks into my apartment, and she says, oh, my gosh. You know, you guys, and the first thing she did was she went out and she bought me an aloe plant.
Oh, very good.
And I put it on the windowsill. She said, you have to have something growing in this house. She says, I mean, I can't stand this, you know. So, you know, my mom, like your mom, the wisest person there is.
That's right. And they know.
But that really matters. But this whole notion of, you know, food justice, connecting food to the other movements that were perhaps more readily you know, inclined to relate to the justice movement. Very important.
That's right. I mean, I think we have to recognize that there are racial imbalances in terms of who has access to good food and inferior food. There are environmental impacts. We have to recognize that the majority of the farmers in this world are female. And so there's a gender equality issue. So all of the justice issues that we care about have some sort of food aspect.
That's the food justice advocate, Reverend Derek Weston. Good to see you. Thank you so
Good
much
you,
for
Tom.
Coming
Thank
in.
Thank you for the invitation.
And that's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, it's Midday on Pets. Dr. Lisa Garrity, the Greater Annapolis Veterinary Hospital, will answer questions. You can leave a question for Dr. Garrity at 410-735-1616. That's our listener line. Fresh Air is up next. Kashmir Hill of the New York Times will talk about the real-world impact of AI. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You're tuned to 88.1 WYPR.